Welcome to the session on contemporary management of complex abdominal wall hernias. My name is Fred Brenneman from Toronto, and I'll be co-moderating with Todd Henneford. As you can see, we have a lineup of experts on a variety of topics in complex AWR. And we're going to get started with Vedra Augenstein from the Carolinas Medical Center in Charlotte. She's going to be speaking about the algorithmic approach to the component separation techniques, the right choice at the right time. Thanks, Vedra.
Thank you very much to the chairman for the honor of the podium. I'm very excited to talk about this topic. This is something that I think about all the time, multiple times a day. These are my disclosures. I'm going to start a little bit talking to you about the history of component separation. So the first America's Hernia Society meeting was actually held in Tucson, Arizona, about 16 years ago. And there was only one paper at that point, at that time, regarding component separation. It was a paper presented from the Netherlands. In looking a little bit further into this abstract, if you look in the conclusion, the component separation was thought to be maybe a new technique that should potentially be used in those contaminated cases where we did not want to use mesh. So certainly things have changed quite a bit since then. Here at America's College of America Clinical Congress this year, there are 18 lectures on component separations. Mike Arnold is one of our residents. He's a third-year resident who spent a year in our lab, and he actually did a very nice analysis looking at component separation in the last decade. So from 2005 and 2014, looking at the NISQIP database, and the component separation, the rate of component separations have really increased from about 2.6% to 10%. What's interesting over this time as well is the kind of patients that we're operating on. So in the past, at this point, our patients are getting a little bit older, a statistically significant decreased number of smokers we're operating on, and also less diabetics. However, we are operating on more obese patients for component separation. Despite all of these trends, however, our results and how the patients are doing postoperatively with component separations is actually getting better, and with the increased number of component separations. Certainly at this point, if you're interested in doing component separations and learning more about them, you can select any continent in this world and you can go and be a part of a hernia society and see many, many lectures regarding component separations. One of the media, basically social media, is very and partially responsible for distributing this to many surgeons. Almost 7,000 surgeons on this International Hernia Collaboration Group. And as you can see, one of the surgeons just posting a question, hello, I'm not a hernia surgeon. Tell me about component separations. When should I employ which one? This kind of question happens all the time. And it is very interesting, to figure out how to exactly answer this. So I'll tell you a little bit about what I think are the goals for a successful hernia repair. I think any time we can strive for anterior fascia closure, we're going to improve patient outcomes. We also want to figure out what techniques are going to give us the lowest rate of surgical site infection, therefore mesh infection, etc. We want to make sure we optimize our patients' quality of life, decrease the hospital stay if possible, decrease the cost of the operations, and also find techniques that are easily reproducible and teachable to our residents and other surgeons. When talking about quality of life, there are a lot of different measurement tools, one developed at the Carolinas Medical Center. However, I think the best way we can all agree on, the patients who don't have wound complications and recurrences are really the patients that have the best quality of life. What doesn't seem to matter when it relates to component separation is actually what kind of component separation you do is related to quality of life. Dr. Blair published this about a year ago, looking at the different component separations we used at Carolinas Medical Center, and looking at the TAR, external oblique, posterior rectus sheath release, and there was an overall improvement in pain, but no difference between those component separations and the quality of life. So why do we do component separations? The most obvious reason is to close the anterior fascia. So we don't have bridging defects and we don't have disasters that are presented in some of these papers discussing the very high recurrence rate, very high wound complication rate, and mesh infection rate. When I see a patient like this one in the office here, I'm constantly running an algorithm in my mind and trying to figure out really what is the best approach. There are so many different ways to fix a hernia now. You have basically three different techniques. You have open, laparoscopic, robotic, and then you have to choose where exactly you're going to place your mesh. Are you actually going to be doing a transversus abdominis fascia release? Are you going to be doing a preperitoneal release? So all of these things really you have to think about, and what I like to do in my office when I see a patient like that is try to figure out what is best for that patient from the data that we have and then essentially sell it to the patient so they will actually understand and go with the proposed procedure. As far as mesh location, this is something that we don't have a true consensus on, but Mike Liang did a very nice study, systematic review, and basically looking at 21 different studies showing that the best place for mesh is a sublayer repair, so either a preperitoneal or a retrorectus repair, as the surgical site infection rate as well as the recurrence rate are the lowest in that particular repair. Well, part of your algorithm for deciding what kind of component separation you're going to do really has to be a decision if you're going to do this minimally invasive or if you're going to do an open hernia repair. And if you want a summary of all the laparoscopic repairs, there are a lot of articles here I listed, but four meta-analysis, a Cochrane a systematic review, and three more randomized trials. And basically the summary on all of these is that laparoscopic hernia repair has a lower rate of wound infection. However, the recurrence rates are similar and there's no difference in pain long term. Even though laparoscopic repair is something that has very, very good results, unfortunately the utilization in the United States is quite low. If you want to learn more about decision making between laparoscopic and open, I highly suggest Dr. Katie Schlosser is one of my fellows who's going to be presenting today at 12:45. She's going to be actually showing you a very elegant analysis of laparoscopic versus open repair and trying really how to figure out what happens when you have a small patient with a big defect versus a big patient with a small defect and how to actually counsel your patients as far as the data is concerned and deciding what repair to do. So with, going through the algorithm, one of the things you have to consider is robotic hernia repair as well, because talking about laparoscopic surgery and open surgery, we can't forget that marrying both of these together and potentially putting a mesh in an extraperitoneal position, not having to use as much fixation, and actually closing these defects may be the optimal way to fix some of these hernia defects. We just have to figure out which ones are the most appropriate ones, and I know that Igor is going to be talking about this a little bit later. So at this point, I'm just going to move on and talk a little bit about the different type of component separations. The abdominal wall has been cut many, many different ways, and if you look up, there are a lot of articles. The ones that I'm going to focus on mostly, the ones that really have been around for quite a while at this point and have been proven to work very well, are the posterior sheath release, which is a posterior component separation, external oblique release, which is the anterior component separation, and then the transversus abdominis myofascial release, which is also a posterior component separation. Component separations became popularized by Dr. Ramirez, who essentially described cutting the posterior rectus sheath and also the external oblique muscle and doing the Ramirez repair at that point. What this is, essentially, and I wanted to list the pros and cons of this repair, is that the Ramirez repair really gives you the best myofascial advancement towards the midline. Some of the cons related to this are that you often will have to raise large subcutaneous flaps unless you're going to use some kind of endoscopic or minimally invasive way to get to the external oblique muscle. This approach can also be combined with a posterior sheath release to actually give you more release, just like Dr. Ramirez described it. And you can also place the mesh in a preperitoneal position. So this is what we reserve for the largest defects. The transverse abdominis myofascial release, more popularized in the last several years, is attractive because it is a posterior component separation, so you essentially do not need to raise almost any subcutaneous tissue flaps to access this. You access it from, it's an extension to the Reeves-Stoper repair after you take the posterior sheath down. It does require some training. You obviously have to really see and perform this procedure many times to really figure out where the nerves are so you don't innervate the abdominal wall. And at this point, it's been performed laparoscopically, robotically, as well as open. The posterior sheath release really gives you the smallest amount of release, but it is something for those very small defects, and I'll show you a little bit of how that fits into my algorithm. I can't talk about component separations without mentioning the preperitoneal hernia repair, which is not a release of the muscle at all, but it is something that I think with proper optimizations of patients preoperatively, that it is my go-to approach for most of these defects, and I'll show you some examples later. Later on. This preperitoneal release has been written about in several articles. One is Scott Roth, who actually has done this transabdominal and also totally extraperitoneal. This paper is about 85 patients. The totally extraperitoneal had actually a few more seromas, but shorter OR time. We recently published this paper in Annals of Surgery. Over 1,000 patients done with a preperitoneal repair, recurrence rate of about 5%. These patients had very large defects. We also utilize component separation, external oblique release in 43% of these patients, external oblique and posterior sheath release, and 30% of them had paniculectomies. So this is something to really consider as a part of your algorithm, and like I said, it is one of the most common operations that I do. So when we're looking for data to tell us really, well, which component separation actually gives you the most advancement of the midline fascia, there's unfortunately not a lot out there. The only paper that I could find that really compares this is this very nice plastic surgery study looking at 10 cadavers. And what they did is they did a TAR on one side and they did an external oblique on the other side. And then they used a tensometer and they would essentially measure which one and look at the different areas in the abdominal wall, the epigastrium, the umbilicus, and also the suprapubic space. So in this study, the external oblique release definitely gave you a much better release than the TAR when you look at any portion of the abdominal wall, which is something that we have found in our clinical practice as well. So what are some tools that we have to predict closure of the abdominal wall? Dr. Beno did this very nice study looking at predictors for bridging. Those were the transverse defect size, defect area, and also the percent abdominal wall defect. This is another study done by Dr. Blair at our institution, who also looked at abdominal wall thickness. So looking at these CAT scans preoperatively, potentially at some point we may be able to have some kind of an app or something that can help us look at a CAT scan and then determine what this patient is going to need. What one of our fellows, Dr. Schlosser, who I already mentioned today, already did very nicely is she actually looked at the volumetrics of the abdominal wall and actually would predict how much weight you would have to lose in order to close the abdominal wall. For example, a patient, you know, who loses about 30 pounds, looking at what the change of the fat inside the abdomen was with that particular weight loss. So when you're faced with decision making, some of the most important things we have to look at, you know, what are the available resources, what is our own experience, and then we look at what kind of abdominal wall we have. So here's an example of a patient right here, very large hernia defect. Let me see if I can show you the CAT scan very quickly. This lady has a fairly large hernia defect. Came to me, and I'm just trying to make a decision as far as what kind of component separation to do on her. So in a patient like this, I would do Botox injections preoperatively. This has been written up by Dr. Ibrahim, and I have already presented this yesterday a little bit. But you have a patient here who has a very large defect. This is a 15-centimeter ruler. When you pull the Cocher's over the midline and try to tighten this together, you can see that really it's barely coming together. So my first and part of my algorithm surgeons to take what's safe. I've already released the skin. I've done a panniculectomy. At this point, I'm going to do a posterior sheath release. You haven't burnt any bridges there. You can see that the peritoneum has been completely closed. All the bowel loops are completely isolated. So after this posterior sheath release, I also had to do on her an external oblique release, plus she had the Botox injections. This is a 50 by 50 centimeter piece of polypropylene mesh, and she's closed, and then this is her postoperatively. Another patient, she had a previous bariatric surgery, had a disaster. Her CAT scan will show you a very large subxiphoid defect. Let's see, this CAT scan's not really playing, but she actually lost 30 pounds preoperatively. So in the operating room, you can see that this is a fairly large defect, but she didn't need any component separation at all. This was completely preperitoneal and postoperative. One more case here, lady also with a very large defect. If you look at the CAT scan here, she also has this colostomy that needs to be taken down. And you're thinking, well, what kind of component separation is she going to need? Well, with some weight loss and also Botox injection, even though this is a 14 centimeter defect here, when you measure that residual defect, there's no defect at all. This comes together very nicely, and you don't need any kind of component separation there. This is her clothes, still bulging a little bit from the Botox just a few weeks out after surgery. So I don't think that there is, unfortunately, an app at this point to predict this. I tried to summarize with you as far as what I think the sizes of the release you're going to get. External oblique is the best, and TAR following posterior sheath release if you want the most release, combining both the external oblique and also this posterior sheath release. And then in trying to give you an algorithm here, I said actual results may vary. I know I see a lot of people are taking pictures. That's exactly why I put this on there, because you really can develop this. The compliance of the abdominal wall is not something predictable. The key on this is the remaining defect size. I'm measuring this when I'm pulling the fascia medially. And if that defect, when you're pulling the fascia medially as hard as you can, is over 10 centimeters, don't do a TAR at that point, because you're going to have a very difficult time closing that abdominal wall. In conclusion, first consider an MIS approach, avoid cutting the abdominal wall, avoid bridging meshes, and measure before you decide on your component separation. Thank you.